This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:33. CONSOL Energy is selling five of its longwall coal mines in West Virginia to Murray Energy. It's a deal slated to cost more than $3 billion. Beneduccio breaks down what happens next.
CONSOL's subsidiary, Consolidated Coal Company, operates five longwall coal mines in West Virginia. These mines, Blacksville No. 2, Loveridge, Shoemaker, Robinson Run, and McElroy, are being sold to Murray Energy. According to a CONSOL news release, the mines produced a combined 28.5 million tons of coal last year. Nick DeUlias is the president of CONSOL Energy.
This is a very emotional decision for the company. These mines have been part of our fabric for decades and decades. We view our employee base and the team that we work with as a family, and we're seeing a change in that makeup of the family. So it's been very emotional, but we are convinced it's the right thing to do.
Along with the coal mines, Murray is getting CONSOL's river and dock operations in the area, which are located along the Upper Ohio River. According to CONSOL, 21 towboats and 600 barges moved more than 19 million tons of coal last year. DeUlias says there are many reasons why this is the right time for the sale. One specific reason is to focus more attention on natural gas production programs.
And that is just a traditional, what you would consider growth type of a segment. So it's all about production growth. It's all about bringing incremental wells online at good rates of return and growing that production over time. The demand for coal domestically has been very muted, as you know, because of regulation, because of coal plant retirement announcements, and because of natural gas displacing coal to a certain extent on the generation grid.
With this transaction, Murray Energy will obtain nearly 4,000 additional employees from CONSOL, as well as six more coal preparation plants, five more active coal mining complexes, six more longwall mining systems, 23 more continuing mining units, and CONSOL's first reverse osmosis plant. This is the plant near Mannington, by the way, which CONSOL opened only 6 months ago. As required under a settlement with the Environmental Protection Agency, it was a result of the 2009 fish kill at Dunkard Creek.
That reverse osmosis plant and the associated infrastructure goes with the transaction. That is an asset that will go to Murray Energy and will continue to be operated as we operate it since we started it up. So just like the five coal mines, don't expect any change in the operation of that facility moving forward, but that will now be a Murray Energy asset.
Murray Energy will also obtain more than 600 barges, 23 more harbor boats and towboats, and five additional coal transloading facilities. In return, CONSOL is getting $850 million in cash, $184 million in value of future payments, and the loss of almost $2.5 billion in liabilities acquired by Murray. This includes retiree health care and retirement plans. CONSOL hopes to invest in gas production with the goal of increasing its annual gas production growth by 30% in 2 or 3 years. DeUlias says he doesn't expect these changes to affect company employees working in West Virginia.
With the new drilling in the Marcellus that now we are able to go do, that's going to create incremental jobs on the gas side. And any potential job reductions or job losses for, I'll call them non-coal mining or non-gas drilling related jobs as a result of this transaction should be minimal within West Virginia. Now, there might be some changes to those types of positions up in Pennsylvania at the headquarters, but that's a different issue. In West Virginia, we basically see minimal changes, if any.
The United Mine Workers of America also says the deal doesn't change anything for union workers. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
Murray Energy's CEO is Bob Murray, whose name might sound familiar. He worked hard to get Mitt Romney elected president in 2012 and has frequently criticized the Obama administration for fighting what he calls a war on coal. Also in September 2009, he donated $1 million to his alma mater, West Virginia University, for mining research. The school has an endowed chair in Murray's name, but his company's safety record has been scrutinized. In 2007, six miners at the Crandall Canyon mine in Utah, operated by a subsidiary of Murray Energy, died in an accident. Three rescue workers were also killed during rescue operations. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:38. Dense fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today with temperatures in the 50s and 60s.
Support provided by the West Virginia Hospital Association. The new health insurance marketplace provides a variety of choices, coverage options, and enrollment information are available at thehealthcare.gov or 1-800-318-2596. Support for NPR is provided by Zurich Insurance, providing risk management and insurance solutions to help businesses meet their ever-changing needs. Learn more at ZurichNA.com.
King's Dominion does not plan to host a Halloween-themed attraction called Miner's Revenge next year. The Virginia Amusement Park charged more than $32 for admission. The scenario's similarities to the Upper Big Branch mine disaster infuriated the families of the victims. As Jessica Lilly reports, the families say it's eerily similar to their real-life nightmare.
The Halloween Haunt 2013 at King's Dominion featured attractions included Edge of Darkness, a show described to bring a decaying circus back to life, Zombie High, listed as an outbreak that would cover the world in days, and finally, Miner's Revenge, that doesn't have a description on the website anymore. Ellen Smith, owner and managing editor of Mine Safety and Health News, quoted the description in an article before it was taken down, stating in part, "It was reported to be the worst coal mine accident in history. The families of missing miners begged for help, but it was decided that a rescue was too dangerous. The miners were left entombed deep underground, lamps at their sides and pickaxes in their hands. They are searching for the men who left them to die." After reading this, Smith started a petition to have the attraction stopped.
I questioned whether or not I was overstepping a line in journalism, whether I was becoming part of the story, which I didn't want to be. But I wanted King's Dominion to understand just how serious this was. You would not make an attraction from what happened on 9/11. You would not have an attraction of someone being stuck in a 110-story high-rise and not being able to get out because the middle part of the structure was blown apart and that people were jumping out of windows. You would never do that. And I did not understand why they chose to take this theme when it hits so close to home. And they're in Virginia. They're next-door neighbors.
The Halloween Haunt event ended this past weekend, concluding the amusement park season as well. Still, Smith says she plans to present more than 250 signatures to King's Dominion and hopes to send a message along with the names.
What might seem so innocent can really, really hurt people and bring back memories and traumatic events that they don't need. They've already been traumatized.
And it has. Gary Quarles, who has actively spoken out to honor the memory of his son, Gary Wayne Quarles, in the past, rounded the courage to share his fury about the attraction.
We're all trying to heal and go on with our everyday life. We would like to be just left alone so we can go with the everyday life.
In an email, King's Dominion spokesperson Jean Petriello said, "Miner's Revenge is not designed nor intended to depict a specific situation. Rather, it is simply a themed Halloween attraction for the 2013 haunt season at King's Dominion." But Quarles says the description hits way too close to home.
And the public don't really need to, they don't need to know all that stuff about our loved ones. Whoever was could have been blowed plumb to pieces, or who was it?
The UMWA joined the families to say, "We are very disappointed by this outrageous attraction at King's Dominion. It's extremely insensitive to all the families who've lost loved ones in mining tragedies over the years." In an email, I asked a King's Dominion spokesperson to address the family's fury and asked how popular the attraction had been. But those and a few other questions like it remain unanswered. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Athens.
In another statement, King's Dominion representative said at the completion of each season, all Halloween attractions are reviewed to allow for new themes. As part of its regular rotation, King's Dominion does not intend to operate the Miner's Revenge Halloween attraction next year. It's unclear if the attraction will remain on the regular rotation schedule past 2014. And here's another story about coal mining and Halloween. Built during a time of labor strife in the southern coal fields, the Whipple Company store in Fayette County is one of those buildings that just looks haunted. Every Halloween, the owners offer tours full of history, folklore, and ghost stories. Producer Catherine Moore set out to do a fun piece about the reported paranormal activity at the store with a couple of local ghost hunters. Well, she got more than she bargained for and found out that there's a lot more to the so-called hauntings and to the history of the store than meets the eye. Now here's part one of The Soul of a Company Store, a three-part series that concludes on Halloween.
History itself is a kind of haunting. In its most abstract, it's a chorus of non-present presences that tell us something, that enfold us at all times and everywhere. These resonances of the past, sometimes they're unseen, and yet they're real. I live in Fayette County, West Virginia, and for years now I've been visiting a place called the Whipple Company Store, a place where stories hover and swirl. It was built at the turn of the 20th century by Justice Collins, a notoriously despicable coal operator. And it's an odd design, an octagon stacked on top of a hexagon with pointy gables that jut up into the sky. To reach the entrance, you walk up a steep set of stairs and through a wide arch to a dark covered porch. From below, it looks like a giant gaping mouth. And when you look at that mouth and those darkened windows, sometimes you can't help but feel like something is looking back. But at one time, this place was very much alive. The community not only did their shopping there, they also visited the doctor, got their mail, paid their telephone bill. Today, it's run as a museum to life in the coal camps, attracting hundreds of visitors a year, some from far away, and others who grew up next door, like Cora Sue Barrett.
My Aunt Elsie lived up here. This is the old church.
She and others like her come to the store to listen and learn, but they also leave their own imprint behind.
When I came in, it was just like, oh, I remember. Mm-hmm. I remember. I mean, it seems like it starts working inward, and it just has to come out.
What happens normally is people don't come in here to tell you anything.
That's Joy Lynn, co-owner of the museum.
As we continue to tour the building, they start reliving their memories. So they let go a lot of their own history, and after 3 to 4 stories sort of overlap, then we usually share them on tours.
She not only runs history tours out of the store, she lets paranormal investigators from all over come and conduct research.
Jane is the psychic of the group, and I run the technical end.
That's Bonnie Hughes. She and her partner, Jane Skeldon, have spent entire nights at the store trying to speak back to the spirits they say inhabit its rooms. One night, I meet these women at the store, along with a man named Wes Harris, a frequent visitor.
I can't keep away from it.
And strong promoter of the stories that are told there.
And every time I let the word out of what I'm seeing here, it's having a huge impact on people, not just intellectually, but emotionally. And so we're just having this incredible surge of energy of people wanting to get in this building.
It's dark. It's late autumn. Chilly. We gather in the main downstairs room of the store, a vast circular space where the slightest whisper echoes. Joy tells a story about how company spies would stand at a central display counter to listen for signs of union organizing.
Would stand there and listen.
She then points out an enormous, creaky freight elevator that accessed a so-called secret second floor, where she says coffins for miners were stored. A self-described debunker of ghost stories, Joy nevertheless avoids the store's basement.
I don't do the basement. Either.
Where she says the company prepared their workers' bodies for the grave in an in-house embalming studio. We move to a narrow hallway towards the rear of the building, where I stare up at an open door near the ceiling. Wes explains that this was a guarded safe where the coal company stored its cash. It's been one of Bonnie and Jane's hotspots. One night, they were mounting a camera there, and Bonnie asked Jane to hand her a stepladder.
And she goes, no, I can't, because there's a dead guy laying in the hallway.
It seemed like it was a movie that was being reenacted. He said, you can see me. And he said, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. And he got shot right through that door and hit the wall, and so the blood just splattered everywhere.
People shuffle nervously. But then we move on to yet another safe, And as we crowd into the tiny metal room,
I smell coal dust.
Cora Sue suddenly smells coal dust.
Are you okay?
And fills with emotion.
Man, I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know. I could smell like a man comes out of the mines mm-hmm. and he has the coal dust on his clothes. Mm-hmm. It just rose up.
Bonnie and Jane play us whispery voices, not their own, they say, that they've recorded in the safe.
Can you give us a sign if you're here?
But despite the talk of unexplained phenomena, I'm not really creeped out at this point. It's the next story that feels like the first true horror we've encountered. Inside the safe, several small slips of paper stamped with numbers are displayed. According to Joy, these tickets are what's known as Esau scrip. The story of Esau, she says, was shared with her by the store's bookkeeper. Wes tells the story of Esau as it was told to him.
Esau was a special kind of scrip, sometimes called super scrip, as in you got it from the superintendent, issued only to women, and it was a form of scrip that would enable a woman to purchase food for her children during the time that her husband couldn't work. But it was only good for 30 days. And if her husband went back to work within those 30 days, then the company, in their kindness, would forgive the debt. And if he did not go back to work at the end of 30 days, then the scrip became a loan that was due and payable in full on day 30. And, of course, the women didn't have jobs or scrip or money. And so they had to pay it back, and it was a collateralized loan. And the women themselves were the collateral.
What does that mean?
That means that their physical selves would be used to pay the debt. And you don't have to go too much further on the radio to fill in the blanks.
But not everyone thinks Esau is history exactly. We'll pick back up tomorrow. For now, I'm Catherine Moore, reporting from Whipple, West Virginia.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.